Drug dealer or a banker? Because if you're a banker, you can fuck right off. Hello and welcome to episode 134 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other greedy bastards as masterpieces. I am Nick, the hedge fund manager of the podcast, and I'm joined as ever by Roger.
It's all going to be just fine, just fine. Just keep buying.
We are discussing a film from 2015, tangentially related to our previous episode, so you may want to listen to that first, which is the documentary All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, principally related to the first part of that three-part documentary. This is the story of the 2008 financial crash, or at least a part of it. A very small part of it, and kind of why it happened and what happened.
Adapted it's from the book of the same name.
By Michael Lewis, I think.
Yes.
Who was around at the time and knew what he was talking about, at least should have done. It's directed by Adam McKay, it's described as a comedy. I find it hard to find this film very funny, I have to say.
I think that may be because McKay is basically, was up to this point, mostly a comedy director, and he did things like, what was the list? Talladega Nights and Step Brothers and The Other Guys, Anchorman, that kind of thing.
And it is, there's a lot of breaking the fourth wall and a lot of comedy elements, and it is a funny film. But I, you know, the whole thing is more to engender anger, which is it's probably fair enough having watched it. So it's the story of specifically of people who saw the housing price bubble burst coming in 2000, and not only the house price bubble, but the kind of attached derivatives market bubble bursting as well, and who kind of bet against. As it's put in the film, you basically bet against the American economy to fail because they stood to make a lot of money if it did when all these things came crashing down. And it is apparently very accurate as far as I can tell. This is, the names have been changed a lot, the people have been changed, but
with I think one exception, all our principals here are based on actual people, but they have been renamed. Presumably so that you can't, I can't make my usual objection. Yes, this was aimed obviously at me personally. I can't make my usual objection of that particular guy didn't do that particular thing.
The one who didn't even get his name changed, I think, was Michael Burry, who is played by Christian Bale. And this is a star-studded man film in that there are a lot of, if you're going to tell the story of the 2008 financial crash, it is probably fair that it is mostly men in the film.
Yeah, but if you're going to change people's names and invent their characters, you could change some of their sexes as well. But
it could
but I suppose... I've got to counting in the end. There are two women who appear in more than one scene each.
Yeah, it's and some of them are pretty objective. Like we have Margot Robbie explicitly in a bath to keep your interest while she explains. What's she explaining? Shorting, I think, at that point.
Yeah.
And we also have Selena Gomez explaining the derivatives of derivatives of derivatives of derivatives. As they're described, I think, a cat shit wrapped in a dog shit in the film.
So I think it would be fair to say the main part is essentially three stories. So you've got Michael Burry, who is, this is basically a Hollywood autist, and I don't know what Burry is like in person.
No.
But I would absolutely bet that he is not as simple as the character is portrayed here, who's very much, the stereotype Hollywood autist. We've seen Christian Bale do much better than this.
It did feel like a, I mean, it is a performance, obviously, but you're right, it's not a very nuanced, he's like, the, he's one step removed from Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Yeah.
Really not very nuanced view of autism. that's a fair point.
But, so, we start with him and he's basically saying,
The numbers can dance for me. I can look at the numbers and see something that you can't because I'm autistic and you're not.
Well, yeah, okay. But basically, there are an awful lot of the term subprime loans, as in loans that we don't think are actually going to get paid back or don't have a great chance of being paid back, that have been repackaged as other things. And so, therefore the market is going to fall is the short version.
Yes.
In these loan derivatives. So he sets up a system, devises a new financial instrument to bet against it. Basically the credit default swap is saying if this loan defaults, then there will be a payment made from one side to the other.
Yes.
And he's saying, yes, I get all those payments when the loans default.
And he feels these are loans that have been cleverly and complicatedly packaged. So they're subprime mortgages, and
that mostly comes up in the next section.
Okay,
This is Jared Vennett, who is
Ryan Gosling,
yeah, and Mark Baum, Steve Carell,
yes.
Again,
so they're all comic actors. Well, no, they're not true. Actually, Steve Carell's the comic actor, and then the other three. When we include Brad Pitt, are all kind of pretty boy character actors, might be the best way of putting it.
These are all actors who have done comedy, at least, in the traditional. I may not be female, but even I have to admit I'm not young enough to be the romantic lead anymore every time.
Yes. Even Tom Cruise has had to do that from time to time.
Again, so we taking Mark Baum as an example, he's the guy running the
a hedge fund, isn't it?
I think it is. Yeah,
it is a hedge fund. Yeah,
and again, I haven't met Steve Eisman, but I find it hard to believe that he is so constantly always his personality is angry with the system.
Well, I have to say, I thought that, but when I read around this, one of the things they said that this film got right was actually how angry and aggressive and abrasive the Mark Baum character, Steve Eisman, actually is. So I it's one
Fair
of those
enough,
it's hard because if it's genuinely accurate, it's hard to believe someone would be that grumpy and horrible all the time. But one of the things people singled out was, yeah, no, that's actually what he was like. So that is tricky. That's a hard one to.
But in any case, his hedge fund gets an accidental call, and he gets alerted to the guy at Deutsche Bank, who has noticed the. Well, basically, he's trying to make some more money by taking on these credit default swaps that Barry has written for his hedge fund,
yes,
or his investment fund, I should say, and flogging them off to somebody else to expose Deutsche Bank to less risk, which is his job. So Barry gets into this, and he and his team start analysing specific mortgage-backed securities.
And that's when they start to have serious worries about the whole system.
Because theoretically it's supposed to be such and so much percentage A grade, as in we are actually going to get our money back on this.
Yes, and then the idea is if it defaults a bit, then you start down with the people at the lower end, the E grade, and then it. So if you're A grade, you're very unlikely to actually lose money.
Well, the other thing is that this assumes, as I think we may have mentioned last time, this assumes no correlation.
Well, that is.
It assumes that I am personally failing to keep up payments on my unwise mortgage, but the guy three doors down is just fine. There isn't a general economic downturn to put us all out of work at the same time as or anything.
Well,
like
I
that.
Think that was part of the idea, though it's not really mentioned in the book, is that America's so big, you're never going to get all of it sort of going down at once. So, you know, if you package all these mortgages together and people from Florida and California are all in one big package, then it balances out all the risk and it'd all be fine. But then they kind of. It turns out, and there's a really good scene. I do think this is very good at explaining it, and maybe it's. simplistic, possibly for someone with a degree in economics.
It's simplistic, but it's not wrong. I mean, I might well advise people to watch this film, and then, you know, if you want to learn more, let's have a chat about it. But it's not a bad grounding for a lay audience.
Yeah, the kind of the Jenga scene where Jay sort of lays out, you know, these people at the top think, and it's a good way, as you say, it doesn't assume correlation that, you know, at the top, you've got no chance of losing money, but it shows that basically these things are all, the summary, and it gets very complicated because Wall Street at that time, hopefully it's a bit different nowadays, but I could be wrong, at that time, really the more complicated these things were, the better it was for people involved.
It's a thing you'll see also in cryptocurrency and AI scams now, that part of the point of it is that it is complex, and so you as a normal person look at it and say, oh wow, that's too complex for me, but I reckon these smart guys must know what they're doing.
Yes, but it turns out it's got so complicated that even the giant banks like Deutsche Bank have failed to realise that a lot of these mortgage derivatives are basically built on sand, on nothing.
Raising was a big part of this as well. So let's say you build your package and it actually is 70% A grade, as it's supposed to be. That package, that derivative security is itself rated A grade.
Yes.
So you can mix that with a bunch of other stuff and still leave it at 70% A grade.
Well, that's the thing. You can scrape off the bottom 10% of 10 different ones and stick them all together and still call it an A grade. And that's becomes a problem, as it did.
One thing that I think really wasn't mentioned, and I found really interesting, is basically there was a whole lot of money sloshing around, particularly in pension funds, and what they were looking for was any reasonably safe investment.
Yes.
So they would buy anything that could be legitimately labelled A grade.
Yes,
that never gets mentioned. Why was there all this money? And basically, it's a shift to the big pension funds and away from banks. But that's a separate story. But I think
scene of showing that, you know, the grading companies themselves are compromised because they relied on the banks paying them to grade their packages.
Very much like audit companies, really, not thinking of any Arthur Andersen in particular.
Well, if they didn't give them a double A grade or whatever, they'd just go to a different grading company instead, who would, which is a consequence, as we talked about in All Watched Over, of deregulation of the banking industry, and that this sort of thing is why rampant capitalism, however many computers you got involved, is not gonna sort of negate the baser instincts of humanity.
Well, also, I think mistaken impression that the film gives is that, you know, there were about these 10 people who said it's all going to come crashing down.
Yeah.
No, there were an awful lot of people who said it's all going to come crashing down. But, you know, there is a quote from Upton Sinclair, which I think is appropriate here. It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it.
Yes.
Yeah. As you said, if Moody's says we're not going to rate this AAA, then they go somewhere else. If an individual analyst says, I think this is iffy, you shouldn't buy it, then the people who pay his salary are going to get him out of the job and put in somebody who will continue to get them the sales and the big commissions.
Yes, it became a bit of a Titanic.
I remember people saying, and I'm not involved in the in that sector at all, but I remember hearing people saying, yeah, this is a real problem. We're going to have to do something about it, but nobody wants to do something about it. It was not in any way a secret if you were interested. But everybody was hoping they could keep the plate spinning just a bit longer.
There's a good quote from, the head of, what did he say? He said something like, after the music stops, there might be a problem, but for the minute, we're all dancing. And he was like, we're all still dancing. And that was kind of the idea at the time. I don't think it was a total surprise, certainly by 2008, that there was a housing bubble. I think a lot of people knew that. Maybe they didn't realise the extent of the kind of the attached derivatives, and that's kind of, I guess that's what this film is about, the realization that it wasn't just the housing prices, it was all the stuff attached to it.
Yeah, I think part of it is also that, you know, in 2007, say, you could legitimately think, well, yeah, it is all built on sand, but it's been working for 5 years, so I should, about 4 years at that point, because 2001 changed things a lot. But, you know, it's been working, why shouldn't it keep working? As long as nobody looks too closely, it'll be fine.
But eventually it runs out of steam. I guess we've segued more into the actual crisis rather than the film itself.
Third strand is a couple of small investors running a firm. They accidentally find somebody's marketing presentation about credit default swaps that the guy Venet, Greg Lipman, was trying to sell. And they start looking into it. And again, these are loosely based on actual people, but
yes,
I think at this point it's starting to feel more that these are the representative small investors rather than people with their own distinct personalities.
Well, they don't really have a different story to tell, do they? I mean, all of them are doing the same thing. They're all
they're the ones we see going to the SEC and saying, you know, come on, guys, report this blatant fraud that is being done, and the authorities say, well, shan't. And the reporter at the Wall Street Journal says, no, I want to keep paying my mortgage.
I mean, it does a really good. I feel the film is very good at explaining what happened and showing the structures around it. I agree that it seems like it's just these lone people who saw it coming, and as I understand it, it wasn't that way. How did you feel then? So the film style is very kind of shaky cam and moving around, and it's always in motion, and partially because they're talking about things that are pretty dull in some ways, that they have to constantly move. So how did you find the general sort of cinematography and
actually reminded me quite a lot of Adam Curtis. You know, let's have a vaguely related shot to get you to feel the right way, without the quick cuts, fair enough.
Yes.
Rather than, you know, let's face it, a lot of what's happening is actually people sitting in offices talking to each other, and it is. Yes. They do their best to make that visually interesting, and to some extent they succeed.
Yes. I found it very watchable, but I felt I was being manipulated because, yes, when you take a step back, here's another board meeting, and here's another board meeting, and people are being, their behaviour is extreme, and they're such pompous dicks in a lot of spaces, but equally, I do think that is not untrue to how Wall Street works.
It is a system that encourages pompous dicks who can get away with it for a bit to keep getting away with it.
I
rewards them for doing that.
I like the slow realization of it. I mean, we have kind of our heroes in the set. That Mark Baum is this. Nobody's pretending that they're good guys, but he's supposed to eat. He is angry at the system whilst he's also parasitizing from it. And he's self-aware enough of that to kind of loathe himself as well as everything else. We have, in so much as we have heroes, we have the kind of the hedge fund people, and we have the lovely, I always like to see him, Rafe Spall. And Rafe gets the nice... there is a nice scene there of where you see it does touch, it doesn't have a lot of time to do it, but it touches upon actual people. So, you know, he goes around to the house of one of these subprime mortgages, which turns out the owner is renting to someone else. It shows you the impact of what is going to happen to these people. So it doesn't do a lot of it, but it does humanize it a bit. And it also has the mortgage brokers, who are possibly the most reprehensible characters in the film, as absolute facile dickheads. But again, they're believable.
Well, I think that one of the key things here, and they exemplify it, is that everybody is thinking, well, my little bit is rotten, but that's just my little bit. You know, the economy as a whole is fine.
Yes, and it's the story of really the broader story is Mark Baum kind of putting together the fact that no, it really is about to all come tumbling down. How did you feel about the? It felt constant, possibly wasn't breaking of the fourth wall, particularly by Jay, the investment banker character. That's Christian Bale, by Ryan Gosling's character.
Jared Venet. Jared Venet, Deutsche Bank. Yeah,
he is quite often, you know, looking at the camera and going, you know, this actually happened. Or in other scenes, we'll have people say, "Well, actually, you know, it didn't quite happen like this. I found out for a different one, but we're doing this." Right? How did that upset you, or did it work for you?
No, I think it works, and I'm going into this thinking, well, this is not going to be a conventional documentary.
Yes.
This is something that is going out and trying to engage mainstream audiences and explain to them how they have been screwed over, basically.
Well, it's an interesting... I haven't let you answer, but I feel it works for me, actually.
On that basis, I would say, yes, it's not a conventional approach, but I think it did work.
I found it quite endearing in the end. Actually, I quite like that you would see this ridiculous thing and you kind of think, well, they just made that up for the film. And then, you know, the character will turn to the screen and go, no, he actually stood up there. He said that. He took that call. He went out. You know, I found that quite endearing, really. Or they would say, it didn't happen like this. I would never go to one of these parties.
I think it helps that, although, I mean, as with the Adam Curtis, it's interesting we did these together. There is clearly a thing they want you to take away from this.
Yes.
But they're not pretending that there isn't.
Yes, okay,
they're not saying, oh, well, you know, this is bad and that is bad, and let's not talk about that other thing which I want you to think about, which for me is the takeaway from Adam Curtis. They're saying, this was screwed up and it's going to happen again.
Yes. Now, again, from my understanding...
Not for lack of trying.
It leaned a bit heavily on that kind of nothing has changed. Because, I think a lot did change after the financial crash. And they've been trying to do more regulation. And there's not much about the fact that quite a lot of that money that was given to the banks has been paid back. So it's not... I mean, a lot of people died in the sense that, you know, they became trapped in poverty and would have suffered health-wise, mental health-wise, that would have led to deaths. And again, that's discussed in the film, that for every, is it 1% increase in the employment rate? The Brad Pitt character talks about there's 40,000 increase in deaths. I don't know how you'd quite quantify that, but I'm sure there have been studies to look into it. But I felt it slightly over-egged the, and nothing has changed and we've learned nothing from it. I don't think that's entirely true.
I will point you at the book by a friend of mine, in fact, David Gerrard, who wrote Libra Shrugged, which is basically about Facebook and specific people at Facebook proposing a payment system which would in effect have been a cryptocurrency stablecoin, which would therefore have been it would have taken in an awful lot of money and would have needed to invest it in AAA securities.
Right.
It's clear that the cryptocurrency fans at Facebook didn't realize what the implications of this were, but, but the various federal agencies very definitely did notice that, yes, you are planning to do 2008 all over again and we are not going to let you.
I think that's what I mean, really. And I suppose the rise of crypto is worrying because it seems to be a way to try and sidetrack all of that thing, all of the things that changed since. So it's encouraging that the regulators are looking at that. There even are regulators and they do have some teeth now that they didn't in 2000. So I feel it had this narrative slightly to push that is, it's all going to happen again, which, you know, it might well do. But the fact it did lean a bit heavily on the and nothing has changed and no one learned anything. I thought that was a little bit unfair. And is it a kind of a populist narrative that I'm a little wary of now?
Well, there has been a little bit of change, but frankly, not anything like enough to head off the next crash.
Right. Yeah. OK. Fair point. So we both enjoyed it visually. Did you find it? I found the dialogue zingy and funny. I was quite endeared by just... There's something about just the sheer shamelessness of the characters like Jared that I do find endearing, even though I don't like him. I find him enjoyable to watch. Which is interesting because I tried to watch Scorsese's one about a stockbroker with... It's basically like Goodfellas with stockbrokers, but I've forgotten the name of it now, but it has, oh my goodness, Leonardo DiCaprio. And I couldn't bear to watch it because he was such a reprehensible scumbag.
Wolf of Wall Street.
That's it. And again, that's a comedy, but he's just so horrible in it that I couldn't watch it. Whereas something about it here, I think it was a mixture of characters that Jared's not the only character in it. I did find it quite endearing and quite fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I would also not call it a comedy, but yeah, I think it gets the job done. Yeah, it would be nice if there were more than one female character who appeared more than twice.
yes.
It would be nice if one of the female characters who appeared twice weren't Karen Gillan in a bikini. But
yes, or Margot Robbie in a bath.
Oh, she's only one scene, so.
Oh, that's true. Who was the other? I guess Marissa
Tomei as Mark Baum's wife.
Yeah, that was a sympathetic.
I mean, she's basically there to say, "Poor you, get out of this. It's no good for you." But
yeah, she does that. But I suppose my counterpoint to that would be: if you are going to tell the story of the 2008 financial crash, sadly, it was mostly guys that were responsible, and so gender swapping some of the characters would perhaps lay the blame on people who it wasn't necessarily their fault.
Well, and there certainly were women involved in doing it, and there were women involved in saying, hang on, we ought to stop this, but...
Yeah, true. Yeah. Fair point. How about the principal actors? Did they work for you?
These are all actors whom I have seen in various things but don't particularly love, except Christian Bale, who I feel he doesn't look very like Christian Bale. He does a good job of acting, but I have seen him do a much better job of acting.
Yes.
So I didn't love the lead's acting in this.
It gets the job done,
it doesn't offend, but nor am I going to say, wow, that guy should get an award for that role.
I did quite like Steve Carell in it because he is quite different to his other best known character in The Office. Brad Pitt I felt was doing a performance again. This time I'm having I felt like the biggest bit of Brad Pitt's performance was I have a beard in this one. So I was vaguely surprised
he wasn't played by
irritated.
Mark Hamill.
Oh, that would have been lovely. Mike Hamill's a great actor. I don't dislike Brad Pitt, but I'm increasingly slightly irritated by it, more so than I find Tom Cruise in a way. I do like Ryan Gosling here. I found he was very endearing. And as I say,
it's very difficult for him to get me cheering for his character. It's not his fault. It's just the way he looks. But yeah, it works.
And we have Rafe Spall, who I adore. And it makes any film better. So he's not in this very much, but I do like him. In it, though I much prefer him in Hot Fuzz. Anyway, all right. Overall, then, I mean, have we got more to say about it? It's a well-explained, zingy film that didn't upset. In a way, I'm surprised it didn't upset you more than it did. I think you thought you were going to be thoroughly pissed off by this one.
Yeah, well, yeah. Having gone into it, accepting everything is going to be wildly oversimplified, and it is, but it doesn't. I don't think there's anything here that gives you an incorrect impression, except arguably nothing was done about it.
Which, okay.
Things were done about it, but nothing like the right things. But yeah
that's fair enough. In a way, it irritated me because we are a peek behind the curtain. We're recording this right after we recorded All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace. I think this irritated me less, and I enjoyed it probably more. And it does go a bit deeper. As pure entertainment, I think it's better. And it's not particularly dumbed down, and it's doing its best to make... I don't feel anyone at the time of 2008, no president or banker or prime minister or chancellor, explained adequately what was happening to the public, which is why we have films like this now and books like that now, because no one really, frankly, a lot of people just didn't understand it at the time, and a lot of people don't understand it now. And so I think there is a need for a film like this. I think
it's particularly pretty... when one of the arguments being deployed is, this is terribly complicated, you can't understand it, just trust us.
Yeah, and when it is actually comprehensible in an easier... I think that's a big failure. This has nothing to do with the film, but I think that's a big failure of the political class at the time. You know, we had... well, it was Gordon Brown at the time here, it was Obama. You know, Obama is not a bad communicator. So the fact that he didn't really communicate what was happening, I think it's a bit of a failing on his part, I must say. I think this film fulfills a need for people to understand what the hell happened.
Mm.
Does that make it a masterpiece?
Watching it, I would have said no, but thinking about it and thinking about the necessary role it fills, I'm thinking maybe.
Yeah, I'm a tri- it's
a I wouldn't want to see a whole lot of films like this, to be fair.
Well, I think that having just espoused the idea of a niche for this sort of thing, I think it does a flipping good job of explaining something that was said to be, you know, basically unexplainable. And it's well done. I think for me, it's close, but I don't think it quite makes it.
I think I'd go along with you there.
Yeah, I think it's just not... It feels like a reaction to something rather than a pure kind of artistic creation. I don't know quite what I'm... it's just a bit too slick.
Well, I think it starts, conceptually, starts from being a documentary that is then dramatised.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how the book handles this. I haven't read the book, but...
I think that's sort of a standard sort of biography thing of these people.
Yeah, so... It works on that basis. I'm not rating it as I would an actual drama.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it is.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? For me, it doesn't quite. I can sort of see my own argument that it is, and I wish it had been better explained at the time. I think it's very good, and I'd recommend it to people who kind of want to at least understand at least part of what happened in 2008. I think it explains it very well. And it might be one of those things that slips out of your mind again a few weeks later. That said, it's a few weeks since I watched it, and I seem to remember a reasonable amount about it.
And sometimes people just are greedy bastards.
Well, we talked about that in All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace, but fundamentally, greed played a big part in it all. But very good. Not quite a masterpiece for me, or you, by the sounds of it, but... recommended if you want to learn more about it. And then once you've whetted your appetite, there are, again, filling that niche, many, many books about it, one of which is the broader view of, called After the Music Stops, and then there's the book that this was based on, The Big Short, and many others. And there are many others because nobody really understood what was happening at the time.
Well, basically, money is an illusion. And as long as everybody keeps believing, it mostly keeps working.
Shh, don't tell them.